It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. While schools are out all over Iowa, school is in session on Talk of Iowa. On Tuesdays, we're learning about Iowa wildlife with wild biologist Jim Pease. On Thursdays, we dig into Iowa history. Learners of all ages are welcome to listen and join in on the conversation. You can email your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can call us at 866-780-9100 or tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. If you are one of those students who isn't in school right now, tell us your grade and where you'd be going to school if you could. You can check out pictures of the animals we're talking about. You can find vocabulary words and discussion questions at iowapublicradio.org. And this is the perfect time of year to get out and explore nature. And today is a perfect day for it, at least while it's not raining. Jim Pease is our teacher. He's also Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. And it is a beautiful day. Spring is popping all over.
Yeah, it is. I'm sitting here in my office looking out the window, and there are new birds arriving each day. There seems to be something new. And spring wildflowers are popping up everywhere. And, of course, we're seeing now some of the mammals that we didn't have around, or they were around maybe, but we just weren't seeing them much all the winter, that are appearing as well. So it's a very exciting time to get outdoors and be in nature. And what better way to do it than while you're not in school, take advantage of these days, these wonderful warm days we're going to have today, and get outside.
Well, and we talked a little while ago about the Decor Eagle Cam, which is, if you're stuck inside, a great way to watch nature.
Yeah,
but it's also great to check out the Decor Eagle Cam, because this is just a wonderful time of year to watch it. And those babies have hatched.
Yeah, they have. They hatched over the weekend. And you can go on the Decor Eagle Cam and see the little buggers. And you can see what that term that we used, precocial versus atricial. Eagle young are very atricial. They're just sort of little fuzzballs, and the parents have to keep bringing food every day and protect them from predators, protect them from the cold winds and rain and occasional snow, all those sorts of things that happen in spring in Iowa. And get them to a point where they are ready to fledge and leave the nest. So these altricial young are really, really neat to watch. And we have the advantage of technology, I guess. I think about this a lot because, growing up in southeastern Iowa where I did, eagles, when I was young, they were only here in the winter. We did have them, but they were only here in the winter, and we primarily saw only adult eagles because in the 1950s and 60s, DDT was spreading rapidly, and declining eagle populations due to eggshell thinning was the norm. So it is so wonderful to see these guys back doing well, and we have so many nests in Iowa, and being able to see some up close and personal via the Decor Eagle Cam is just a real special treat.
Absolutely. And if you want to toggle back and forth, and you should, between the nest at the Trout Hatchery and the Decor North Nest, you can mm-hmm. see the eaglets at different stages of development, because the North Nest hatched about a week ago. So those mm-hmm. eaglets are farther ahead than the ones at the Trout Hatchery, and it just fascinating to watch this time of year. Okay.
It's amazing how fast they're growing.
It is. It is incredible. But we're not here to talk about birds today, Jim, although I think you would talk about birds any day.
You're right, I would.
All right. We want to talk about mammals. And of course, there are so many mammals, wild mammals, that live in Iowa, because of course, humans are mammals too, that we cannot talk about all of the mammals. So you have chosen a list. How did you choose the mammals we're going to talk about today?
Well, for a variety of reasons. They have some different strategies that are sort of interesting to look at. And we have, as you said, lots of mammals in the state, and we could choose all of them. We didn't choose deer, for example. We talk about deer a lot, and there's a lot of information on deer. But there are certain things about these that you'll see that they have in common. Many of these, I'd say five of the six species we're going to talk about, have various forms of emigration. They're moving around from one place to another, and they move with the seasons. For example, bats. We have nine species of bats in the state of Iowa, and all the bats we have are insectivorous. They eat insects on the wing. They have to fly around and catch their own breakfast, lunch, and dinner with their mouths open and or with the tail membranes they have that they can sometimes use as a sort of a funnel and catch them in that. And they will fly around and have to catch insects. Well, in the wintertime, of course, we don't have a lot of flying insects around. So bats have to emigrate someplace else to spend the winter. We talked about in our last program, we talked about the whole idea of hibernation, where the body slows way down, gets almost to the freezing point. And bats are true hibernators. They have to get into some place that is at or just above freezing so that they can hibernate in that kind of area. They cannot hibernate in an area that is well below freezing. In fact, lots of times, the big brown bats in particular will find people's attics, good places to not only have their young in the summer, but maybe overwinter there as well. Except that when it gets really, really cold in January, it's too cold for them, and they have to wake all the way up, get their body going from just a few, their heart rate goes from just a couple of beats a minute to up to close to 200 beats per minute. And then they have to move down to some place where they can find slightly warmer temperatures, and they'll often crawl down into the walls. So I used to get lots of calls from people saying, oh, I've got bats in my walls. I hear something scratching in there. And that's what they've done. It often happens in January after that first really cold spell after Christmas, and the bats will move down into the walls. Well, at this time of year, those bats are arriving back in Iowa, usually right around the 1st of April. The bats wake up and get outside again. Now, they don't all species. We have nine species in the state. All those species don't necessarily spend it in our attics. Many of them go to caves. They'll go to underground cisterns. They'll go to bridge abutments. They'll go to some migrate out of state to caves that are actually north, south, east, or west of where they may spend the summer. It's not a direction thing so much as it is the location to overwinter is the most important thing. I've seen bats overwintering in a cave as far north as central Minnesota. So the cave was warm enough for the winter, but the bats had to get way back in a crack in that cave in order to survive the winter. So they emigrate from all directions. They move around, and bats are coming back to Iowa now. They will find a place to have their young, and some of the species are colonial breeders. In other words, they'll have their young together. In big brown bats are one of those, for example, and so they'll find they may hang out in a cave, they may hang out in an attic, they may hang out in a bat house that you've provided. Any of those areas are really good for them. And others are solitary, however, and so they will have their young up in a fold of a leaf up in a tree, or in a hollow tree someplace. They'll find the little unoccupied hollow of a half rotting tree, and protected from the rain and the wind and the cold, because the females, the mothers, have to go out every night in order to find more food for themselves, in order to feed these young. And that's a pretty fascinating way of raising youngsters. Leave them home alone, to make it on their own while mom's out getting the food, bringing home the groceries.
Right. So in those colonial bats, they will leave all the young together with maybe an adult or two to supervise?
Yeah, it is amazing. They will push these. There might be, for example, in a given attic, let's say you've got 100 female bats up there. That means you've got at least 100 young bats as well. And they'll push them together in a tight cluster. And like many mammals, being altricial, they have to, they're born blind and hairless, mostly hairless. So they have to keep each other warm. Attics are good places in the summer to keep the young warm. That's why they choose those often to have their young in. So they push them all together, though, in a cluster, and then the females go out through the cracks or the soffits or the broken window or whatever it might be in the attics, and go out for, you know, a couple of hours to several more hours during the night to find find insects. And when they come back, this is the amazing thing. Out of that 100 bats, they will find their own young in that cluster.
They all look the same to us, but...
Yeah, they sure do.
A mother knows. We're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about wildlife today on Talk of Iowa. Wildlife biologist Jim Pease is here with us, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions or observations. 866-780-9100 is the number to call, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. School is in session on Talk of Iowa with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. While school is out, physical school, we are having lessons every Tuesday with Jim. We're talking about Iowa wildlife. On Thursdays, we dig into Iowa history. And of course, learners of all ages are welcome to join us for those shows. And today we're talking about some of Iowa's mammals. We've been talking about bats, Jim, and of course we also mentioned earlier it's a great time to get out and explore as things warm up. Of course, during this strange time, be safe. Don't explore in groups. Don't explore with people who aren't part of your family unit who you're quarantining with. But if you can be out there, do be out there, because sunshine and fresh air are great for everyone, and it's a great place to learn. And Jim, before we move on from bats, I want to just hit one note. Now, I think if we have students listening right now, they already know that many of the myths that we embrace about bats in our culture are not true. I feel like kids understand that way better than adults. But just before we talk about our next animal, there are so many myths. Tell me what we need to know about bats so that we don't dislike these beautiful, fascinating creatures.
Well, they have, they're really quite beautiful. They eat tremendous quantities. If you look at a bat colony or through the summer, they eat tremendous quantities of insects, both helpful insects and lots of harmful insects, or insects we consider harmful. And they are like everything. They have they sometimes come into conflict with humans, but we need to keep that in perspective. They're trying to make a living just as we are. And I think one of the biggest myths about bats is that they're carriers of rabies. There's really no such thing. Bats get rabies, and just as with most things, rabies is a fatal disease to them. And if they get it, they die. Now, they can shed live virus for just a few days before they would die. But this whole idea of a carrier where an animal carries the rabies virus without succumbing to it just is a complete myth. It really, if they get it, they're going to die. So you certainly, with any animal, you want to be careful around them, but observe them from a safe distance. But they're really a wonderful, incredible critter. The more you learn about them, the more fascinated you get by them. And you look past that face that to us looks sort of strange, and we've been taught that that's scary and strange, but they're really pretty, pretty fascinating critters.
Absolutely. And I think they look like tiny Pomeranians. So I don't think they look so scary anyway. They just look like really, really tiny small dogs to me in some ways.
Yeah, or chihuahuas.
Right. If you get excited about bats, you should spend some time on Bat Conservation International's website. There are so many great things you can learn there and great photos you can see. Let's talk about another animal that I think a lot of people dislike, and now you and I are in agreement on this with so many animals, but again, this dislike is unearned. I want to talk about skunks.
Oh, yeah. They're just so much fun. They are one of the critters that is, this is an Iowa mammal that is a house cat-sized critter. They have all sorts of adaptations for being skunks. They are crepuscular and nocturnal, and that's a word we should have put on vocabulary as well. Crepuscular means it's sort of dawn and dusk, but they'll also come out at night, which is the reason they're black and white, because at night any of their predators, which are primarily great horned owls in Iowa, any of their predators are incapable of seeing color at night. So being black and white is basically what you see at night. And so these are warning colorations. It's like, yep, I'm right here. Don't come and get me. And for most other mammals, that's a good thing. They've learned very, very quickly that skunk spray is not something you want to get in your eyes or your nostrils. It gives you temporary blindness. It really impacts your nostrils and your taste buds, everything. It's quite a powerful chemical. And to have that as a defense, so they want to be seen. They want to warn other mammals, don't try to prey on me or I'll and the other mammals have learned quickly.
And that doesn't work on great horned owls.
No. Turns out that great horned owls don't have much of a sense of smell. I once helped band a great horned owl when I was doing research up in Canada. Banded a great horned owl that had obviously been with a skunk recently. Boy, oh boy, it was really powerful. And I didn't think we could measure and weigh and band that owl quick enough, but we really did. But he'd clearly been had a skunk recently. So skunks are preyed upon by great horned owls, and they're the primary predator, that and cars, of course.
Right.
But this is another small mammal that is emigrating in Iowa, mostly in March. They actually are springtime breeders, springtime being in February through March. And in fact, our listeners may have seen some, like some of these other animals, in February, get hit by cars on the sides of the roads. And almost invariably, I could drive by and say, oh, that's a male. And Cindy, my wife, would say, well, how can you sex them at going at 55 miles an hour? It's because of the time of year. It's usually the males that come out right at that time of year to check out the females in his home range. Check out his girlfriends, make sure they're home, make sure they're doing okay. And that's often when they breed, is during that that February, late winter, very early spring time period.
And we see them on the road a lot because they're so short, right? They've got kind of short little stubby legs. They like our roads.
Very short legs. And it's a lot easier to travel along those. Plus, there's a lot to be scavenged along there. These are omnivores. They eat just about anything. So they'll any spilled grain that's come out, maybe those packages of garbage that somebody has thrown out the window, they'll find. So they're omnivorous. They're eating a little bit of everything. They take advantage of what's available given the time of year. They'll eat berries when they're available. They'll eat worms and grubs this time of year, especially worms after a rainstorm when they come up onto the surface of the ground. Boy, the skunks are right after them. They'll eat grubs a little later in the summer. I've seen places where they actually roll back the turf very carefully and get the turf grass and get the grubs right underneath there.
See, they're helping you have a nice lawn, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're hoping you have a healthy turf that has lots of grubs in it so that they can come and search for them. So you bet. So they're emigrating now from maybe their winter quarters to a place the females are out and about trying to find a safe place to have their young. And it might be under that deck that you built a couple of years ago. It might be underneath that garden shed. It might be underneath that, inside the bales of hay that you put up last year and didn't use over the winter. Lots of places like that they'll choose to have good, safe, warm places to have their litter of young. Like all mammals, they will nurse their young for, just like the bats, they'll nurse their young for a month or two, and then the young go out with mom, and usually they separate in the fall of the year. So they have a litter of maybe 3 to 5, sometimes a few more, little ones that survive through the if they survive through the summer and into the fall, then they have to be on their own through the winter.
All right. So we have a lot of animals to cover, and we've got this group here that you've put together that are all kind of the same shape. You know, I mentioned the skunk stubby legs. They're kind of like the corgis. I'm just going to make a lot of dog comparisons this hour. They're like the corgis of wild mammals with their short little legs. But we also see possums and raccoons, and they're all, you know, pretty low to the ground. They're all shaped pretty much the same way, but they're such different creatures. Let's talk a little bit about possums, because they are weird.
Yeah, they're weird in so many ways, but they're so wonderful. They really are a fascinating Iowa critter, and they've gotten a bad rap again, I think, for being, they look sort of like a large rat, you know. It's a mostly bare tail and a sort of sparsely haired back, and they have this sort of snarl on their face a lot of the time. But they're fascinating little guys. First of all, they're the only marsupial in North America. They're mammals. Their gestation period for their young, that's the time that the young are growing inside the female, is only 12 or 13 days. And then the young are sort of born and crawl their way into the pouch of the mother. So marsupials are just this whole other group that is much more common, of course, in Australia. But in North America, this is the only living relative of marsupials that are left in the country. So it's a really fascinating critter. And they actually can have, in parts of Iowa, especially in southern Iowa, they might have two litters a year, but mostly it's one litter. And then you've got this raccoon fellow that seems so common. Gee, why are we talking about raccoons? Because they are common and very misunderstood. They are like the other, skunks and opossums. They're omnivores as well. They'll eat just about anything they can. But you'll see in one of the pictures we have that you put on the website, there's one that's clamming in the middle of the Raccoon River, and properly named, of course. And he was out in the middle of the day, but you can see I happened to be in my kayak at that point. He didn't see me at all, and I kind of hid behind an overhanging branch and took his picture. He's out in the middle of the river in the middle of the day, and he's looking around, but he's feeling with his front feet because they have very, very sensitive front feet. One of the most well-developed parts of their brain is actually the part that's connected to the sense of feel, especially in those front feet. And he was looking for Iowa's mussels and other crustaceans under there that he would then pull up and eat. So it's they're fascinating critters in their own right. Raccoons and possums are also emigrating right now, trying to find the right place to raise their young for the year.
And let's compare and contrast a little bit those three creatures, the skunks, the possums, and the raccoons. Let's talk about the litters that they have, because all of those creatures only have one litter of babies a year, right?
Yeah, with the exception of a possum, which can have up to two, but mostly one litter in most of the state. It's kind of like you want to propagate your species. So you have, and bats will have a single young. Most species of bats will have one or two young, and that's it for the year. So you, in order to keep your species going, you have to have young each year that then add to the population. In the case of these guys, these three, the skunks, possums, and raccoons, possums can have more, but for the most part, they will successfully raise any one of these three will successfully raise 3 to 4, maybe 5. Successfully raise them into the fall if they're lucky, so they're fairly small litters. You're not talking like with insects where you have hundreds of offspring every time you lay eggs. This is a high investment of energy and parental raising young. So it takes some doing. In most cases, the females are all three of these cases, the females do it on their own. The mothers don't have the assistance of dad around to do it, because dad has several girlfriends at a time and will father several litters of each of these.
Because, of course, his goal is to propagate his genes, to spread his genes as far and wide as possible. We see that a lot in the animal kingdom. By the way, if you have questions about these creatures, and these are all creatures that we see sometimes. So if you have seen this kind of animal and you want to ask a question or tell us what you've seen, you can give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or send email to talkofiowa. I already said that one. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. Okay. So, Jim, we've got about 2 minutes before the break, but I think one of the other really interesting things about this set of three creatures is that they all have such very different ways of defending themselves. And when you mentioned the skunks, and of course we all know how skunks defend themselves, right?
Right, right. Yeah, well, the spray. And possums are great. You know, they're playing possum. That's where that phrase comes from. And what possums will do is, of course, they'll actually go into, first they'll snarl and try and scare you away and grit, you know, show their teeth, growl a little bit. But if that doesn't work, they literally faint and will play dead. It actually is a sort of a fainting spell, and so sometimes you see a a possum on the side of the road, and it may or may not have been hit by the car. It may just be playing dead until it feels safe enough to get back up.
And I have certainly been fooled. I've lived in the country in Iowa almost my entire life, and there have been many times when I thought that I have found a dead possum, and then it gets up and leaves.
Goes away. Right?
Even if you're very experienced, it is impossible to know whether that possum is playing possum or genuinely has passed away.
All right. These guys have both adopted to both life in the city and in the country, so you can see them no matter where you live in Iowa.
Absolutely.
You can see all three of these species.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. School is in session on Talk of Iowa today with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. We're talking about some of Iowa's mammals. We've talked about bats, possums, raccoons, and skunks. We've got a couple more coming up in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. While school is out in Iowa, school is in session on Talk of Iowa. On Tuesdays, we're learning about Iowa wildlife with wildlife biologist Jim Pease. On Thursdays, we're digging into Iowa history. And of course, you are welcome to join the conversation. Learners of all ages, even if you're not missing school right now, but you love to learn, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Jim Pease is here with us. He is Emeritus Associate Professor of Natural Resource Ecology and Management at Iowa State University. And remember, go to our website, iowapublicradio.org, and you'll find a web post about these mammals that we're talking about this hour. You'll find a slideshow that shows you pictures of all of these different creatures, along with vocabulary words, and we have added crepuscular and marsupial to the list, and discussion questions as well. So, Jim, we were just talking about skunks, how they defend themselves by spraying. Possums, how they very weirdly defend themselves by holding still. They either hold still and gape at you, or they play dead. And then raccoons are really, they're maybe a little more typical as far as their reaction, like other mammals. They have a very, very aggressive sounding growl when they feel threatened. Tell me more about raccoons.
Well, it's sort of fight or flight, and that's a very common response, I think, for many things. Remember, these are all three of these are omnivorous, so they eat both meat and vegetation that's available, or berries and other sorts of things. Wide variety of foods, very, very adaptable, including, as we said, in some cases, garbage, that sort of thing. And these guys, raccoons, this loud growl, if that doesn't scare you away, they will take off in the other direction. The fact that they're very good tree climbers helps as well. So they will scurry up the side of a tree very, very quickly to kind of get out of your way as much as they can.
Right. They don't really seek out conflict. Except maybe with each other sometimes.
Yeah. In fact, I did a study one time for my senior project when I was at the University of Wisconsin, where I put radio collars on raccoons in an urban area in Madison, Wisconsin, and found that an awful lot of them, I'd lose the signal somehow. And so I was out one night following them around and watched them as they ducked down into the storm sewer system. And so they would live down in the storm sewers, which were these underground metal-covered tunnels. And I would lose the signal then, of course, when they would go down in the storm sewers. They're very, very adaptable. They did not seek out my company and would run the other direction if they possibly could. So but that loud growl is certainly something that you'll sometimes, if you're in the country at night or you're camping, you can hear raccoons arguing with one another along a stream or a river where they're trying to get the same muscle or clam in that stream. So you want to hearing them, boy, they can really raise a ruckus.
And they're having kind of a moment as a poster child during this worldwide pandemic because people are putting up pictures of raccoons dangling their hands in the water and telling people to wash their hands. They are the poster child for good hand washing. And of course, they're not actually washing their hands, Jim. That's how they look for food, right?
That's right. They use that incredible sense of touch to search for food under the water at night. So it's you have this, not only is it in the water, but it's at night as well. So they have this almost like eyes in the ends of their front toes, able to very sensitively feel along the bottom and find food in a river or stream. So yeah, and, they're pretty special critters.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to move on, but I think their hands are incredible. And as you know, Jim, of course, I grew up in a family of licensed wildlife rehabilitators, so I interacted with a lot of wild animals as a child. But their hands are so similar to ours. Of course, they don't have an opposable thumb, but I often thought if they did, humans should watch out because I'm not sure we'd be on top. Let's go to the phones here. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Marsha's on the line in Slater. Hi, Marsha.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, yes, I have a question for Jim Pease. I was just wondering how he felt about having a skunk for a pet.
All right, Jim.
Okay, well, skunks, like most wild critters, I think mostly deserve to be in the wild. It would only be legal to have a skunk as a pet if you purchase one from a licensed breeder of domesticated and probably de-scented skunks. I think they're interesting. But I think putting in captivity is probably not in the best interest of the animal. But they're certainly fascinating to have around, and I know that Charity has, as a child, actually helped raise some young skunks to adulthood, but they were all let go, weren't they, Charity?
They were. They were all released back into the wild. And, you know, with wild creatures, I think a lot of people make the mistake of wanting to bring them into their homes to be pets because when they're little, you know, they're adorable, they're easy to handle, they're gentler, but they're all wild animals. They just because they're raised in a home does not make them a domestic animal. And so
exactly.
They will embrace those instincts. And I've never lived with adult wild animals, really. So I wouldn't want to. And it doesn't seem like a very good idea for them or for the humans. You want to talk
about... And in fact, raccoons will raised in as, you know, as pets... As adults, will often what people say, oh, they turned on me. No, they just were exhibiting their natural wildness. And so I don't think it's good to bring wild animals into captivity unless it's for rehabilitation or something like that. So, yeah.
You want to talk about rabbits today, which I think might surprise some people because rabbits are everywhere. They are so easy to take for granted.
They are.
And I know a lot of people get very frustrated with rabbit behavior in their yards and gardens. But why do you want to talk about rabbits?
Well, rabbits and voles, you know, here we've been talking the last three species we talked about, skunks, possums, and raccoons, were omnivorous. So they will... eat plants, they'll eat animals, they'll eat berries, they'll, you know, eat grubs. They're very omnivorous. But rabbits and voles are the thing, in fact, the things that are the prey species for so many species of Iowa birds and mammals and even reptiles because they have to, they are the on the menu every time. You can name a predator in Iowa, and rabbits and voles are on the menu for them. So they have to have strategies in order to maintain their populations that are quite fascinating. And so instead of having just one young, like bats do, or one litter, like skunks, most opossums and raccoons do, per year, rabbits and voles, man, they have to really crank it up. You know, they got to have lots of litters and lots of young. And in Iowa, the cottontail rabbit is the one that most people are familiar with. They are altricial young. The young are born blind and with little fur on them. So they're in a nest. But the mothering rabbit is quite fascinating. You know, we talked about how mother bats have to leave their young behind to go out and catch their meals so that they can nurse those young. Well, mother rabbits will leave. In fact, there are already nests of rabbits, I'm sure, all over the state of Iowa now, of cottontails, in people's yards, along roadsides. They're all over the place. The young are in a very, very shallow burrow, maybe 4 to 6 inches dug into the ground, hopefully on a little higher ground so that they can not get flooded out. It's lined with grasses and then a little bit of fur that's pulled from the stomach of the rabbit, which helps keep them warm. And the young are visited maybe once a day for about 30 seconds to maybe a minute and a half. So
not super, you know, hands-on moms.
No
helicopter parents in the cottontail.
It's the opposite of a helicopter parent. It's like, it's tough love, you know. Well, but the point is that these guys can't get out and run around very easily, so it's their quietness and the secrecy of that nest. So she'll come at the, you know, at the darkest point of the night, or at right at dusk when things are where it's hard to see, and she will kind of squat over that, and the young come up and will nurse with her. As I say, 30 seconds to a minute and a half is about all they get, and that's the milk then that allows them to grow. And in a couple weeks' time, they leave that nest and then they're on their own. And she will have 3 to as many as 5, sometimes even 6 litters in a summer. So she's producing lots of young, and she might have, again, 3 to 5 or 6 young in each litter. They can have up to 8, but that's pretty uncommon. And so she's having a bunch of litters in the summer in order to propagate the species. Now, voles, and I'm talking meadow voles here, but we have other species of voles in the state of Iowa. Meadow voles, the one that's most common, and people say, well, we don't have meadow voles here. We do. We have them everywhere because, as I say, they're on every menu for every predator in the state. And they are the staple food for everything from snakes to owls. It's just amazing. Of coyotes and foxes and everybody in between, skunks and raccoons, loves to eat voles. And so the voles, boy, they really have to crank it up. They have a litter about every 3 weeks.
Every 3 weeks.
Every 3 weeks, they'll have a litter of young. And it can actually breed at any time of year. As long as their food supply is good, they can breed throughout the year. And that food supply is pretty critical. In the wintertime, sometimes where they don't have bird feeders to get the spillage to feed from, they have difficulty having them in the winter. But throughout the growing season, they're having a litter every 3 weeks. So you can see how vole populations, they have to produce, and a female vole is mature at 1 month of age, so 30 days old, and she's ready to breed.
Wow.
So it's amazing, yeah. So you can see how, if we didn't have those predators, the voles, we'd be overrun with voles. They'd be everywhere. Instead, lots of things eat them along the way.
Now, so voles, meadow voles, to me, seem maybe like they fit a little bit into the category that we talked about last week, those underground creatures. So tell me little bit more about them, because they're kind of on the edge, right?
They are. They're what we call semi-fossorial. the animals we talked about last week were all the fossorial underground animals. These guys are semi-fossorial. In the wintertime, when the ground's frozen, they have trouble digging in the ground, so that they'll actually, with particularly in Iowa, they'll, underneath the snow, right at ground level, they'll have tunnels through the snow, and they'll line those tunnels, which is really kind of cool, with grasses, so that they, when the snow melts, what you see on your lawn or in your pasture or wherever, you'll see these lines of kind of circuitous lines of tunnels all made out of dead grass. And you think, oh my gosh, I have a terrible problem here. And that's a telltale sign of voles in the wintertime. Now, at this time of year, they usually retreat. It's not a problem in anybody's lawn because they have to get out of the lawn. Lawnmowers are terrible predators on voles, so they retreat back into the edges of the lawn. But they can go in prairie areas or grassy areas that are not mowed. They can go down into the top inch or two or maybe three, so right at that turf level, and form tunnels during the breeding season. But again, they're food for so many things. They don't have much of a chance. A very old bull might be 1 year old, but that's a really old bugger.
Wow. Now, if you wanted to see voles, can you catch a glimpse of them?
Yeah, they're tough to see because they're made for that sort of semi-fossorial living habitat that they live in. You can go out into a tall grass prairie area of your local county park and just kind of part the grasses, get down there on the ground level, and you might find tunnels of voles. And these might be meadow voles, they might be prairie voles. There are several species of voles that we have in the state, one of which is actually an endangered species, and that's a redback vole. So that you find those little tunnels. These guys have very small rounded ears, very small eyes, and their tail, instead of being long like a mouse, this little guy is only about an inch long tail. Makes good sense, I guess. If you're going to spend most of your time underground, you don't want that tail getting in the way. Also, you don't want to have that tail out there so something's going to catch you by grabbing the tail. So they're really, really an important. Both rabbits and cottontail rabbits and these meadow voles are really, really important critters for the Iowa's woodlands and fields.
Well, Jim, we are out of time, but again, to reiterate, it's just a beautiful time of year to get out and explore, as long as you can do that safely and stay away from other people, which honestly is the best place to explore, best way to explore nature, because if you're quiet and you're by yourself, you've got a chance of seeing some really amazing things, don't you, Jim?
You sure do. The other thing I would do is I would take along, there's a field guide to Iowa, Mammals of Iowa. It's available through ISU Extension, Iowa State University Extension Store. You can download Mammals of Iowa Field Guide, and it's a wonderful resource for adults and younger folks
All
as
right.
well.
Well, Jim, we'll talk again next Tuesday. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.